Okay, good morning everybody. Here we are this week, Parshat Vayeshev. So, we know in Parshat Vayeshev, the central episode is the story of the Mechira of Yosef. So I'd like to take a look at one particular event that happened here, and questions and halachic points that come out from it. So we know that Yosef approaches, and there's a discussion with the brothers what they're going to do, and they say, let's kill him, and throw him into one of the pits. We'll say that he was consumed by wild animals, and then we'll see what will be with his dream. And Reuven hears about this plan, and he says, he saved them from their hands, let's not kill him. So Reuven suggests, instead of actually killing him, let's just throw him into the pit and don't directly kill him. And then the prophet explains that his intent by saying this was Leman Hatzil Oisoi Miyod. His intention was, the plan was to save Yosef from the hands of the brothers, La Shiva El Ovid, to return him to his father. The Reuven's plan was, his intention was, we'll throw him into the pit. Afterwards, when nobody else is noticing, I'll come back, I'll take him out of the pit, and we'll take him back home. You know, that didn't work out in the end. So they took him, they accepted his suggestion. They threw him into the pit. And the pit was empty, ein boi mine. Very famous words of the apostles. The pit was empty, it did not have in it any water. The pit was empty, it didn't have in it any water. So, we know there's a very famous comment of Chazal over here, which I forgot to actually put on the sheet, but Rashi quotes it, the pit was empty, it didn't have in it any water. So it didn't have in it any water, but it did have in it something else. That's the implication of the pasuk. It didn't have any water, it did have in it something else. What did it have in it? Nechashim va'akrabim yeshbo. It had in it snakes and scorpions. It didn't have water, but it did have snakes and scorpions. So ask him a question, being that this is the case, how do we understand Reuven's intention by throwing him into the pit? It would indeed have been an entirely empty pit with nothing in it, so, but well and good, fine. So put him in the pit, we'll come back in an hour's time when nobody notices him, and we'll take him out. But if the pit is full of snakes and scorpions, so we can already expect Yosef to survive the company of the snakes and the scorpions. So what's Reuven, what is Reuven's plan?
There's a sadly he'll survive, isn't
there? Oh, so there's a lot of different Mahalkin here, that's one of them. We'll go through a couple of them. Let's first look more closely at the kasha, and we'll see if I shared three terutim to this kasha. Let's look how the Gur Arya asks this kasha. V'in toima, eich hoyach havalotei shal Reuven la'at tzina. How was the intent of Reuven to save him? Hare hoyavoy v'choshim v'akravim, and had in the pit snakes and scorpions. And furthermore, he makes the kasha sharper by basing it on a halachic thought. Of Masechet Yevamos Tanya, in Masechet Yevamos we have learned, If witnesses see a man falling into a pit full of snakes and scorpions, that is sufficient testimony to permit the wife to get remarried. Even though they didn't actually see him literally dying, but they saw him falling into this pit of the snakes and scorpions, we're entitled to presume that that was the end, to the extent that we can rely on this testimony to permit the wife to remarry. In other words, we're saying that falling into a pit of snakes and scorpions is an absolute certainty of death. Here they were the Foshim Va'akrabim. So how did Reuven think to save him? So let's look first what the Gur Arya himself answers, and then we'll look at some other answers. The Gur Arya answers by looking very closely at the wording of Chazal. Ein ze kasha, he answers in the second paragraph. The Hosom Ka'oba Lebur Maleo Choshin by Krabim. Look very closely. Over there in Yavamas, when we discuss this situation of the husband who falls into this pit, where the testimony is sufficient to permit the wife, there it describes that the pit is full of Lechoshim by Krabim. A pit full of snakes and scorpions. The Vada Yemitsu. Avolkan, but over here, Loyara Habor Maleo. Chazal do not write that the pit was full of the Lechoshim by Krabim. And on foil the Lechoshim by Krabim Shom. It simply mentions that there were some. So there's a little. The Hein Malka Hosom. The Kama, and that is indeed the implication of the Gemara in Yavamas, where it clearly writes, Lebor Maleo Lechoshim by Krabim. He falls into a pit full of snakes and scorpions. Mashma Dafka Maleo. Specifically, it's full. Avalayna Maleo. Look, if it's not full, then not. If there's just one or two, Yotel Hu Lahamid Oisom. Well, if there's just one or two, then the one who falls into the pit, he can have it out with the snakes and scorpions, and maybe he'll manage to jump on the head of the snake, and that's it, whatever it will be. Abu Baramaleo Efshah. Masha Enkain, a full pit is impossible. So that is the answer to Reuven's intent over here. Since this pit was not full of snakes and scorpions, it simply had a few, there's a chance of a survival, unlike the Gemara in Yavamas.
How do we know?
Well, the question is really, how is Chazal know? In other words, the Gemara is basing himself on the dictum Lashon of Chazal. And he is obviously saying the Leo. And over here,
it's just in the lack of it. It's like the lack of the word, that's all. Not there was nothing specific there to say, well, how many, just said, no, wasn't so.
Right, he's looking at that phrase in contrast with the phrase used in Yavamas.
Yes,
in Yavamas it uses the word that was Maleo, the Pashi Bakram, and here it doesn't just say yes, but.
Okay.
So, now there's another parrot, very famous parrot of the Ur HaChaim, which we're wrong with, we're others too. The Ur HaChaim says, by Yatsileu the Yavam, Hirush. Lefi she'ha'olam bal bechira v'rotzoi v'yokal la'roi mishaloi nischayat mita ma she'enkin chayat roi lo yifgu'u ba'olam im lo yitchayat mita l'shamayim. Says the Ur HaChaim, it is much more dangerous for a tzaddik to get in the way of a bal bechira than to get in the way of somebody, of something, of a creature which is not a bal bechira. Again, there's a difference, says the Rahim, there's a difference between if the brother will start up with Yosef, or if we'll put Yosef into the bar at the mercy of these creatures who are not Bali Bechira, at the mercy of the snakes and scorpions, meaning to say that the tzidkus of Yosef could save him from the Nechoshim Ba'akrabim, as we could expect some sort of faith, let's call it, which cannot necessarily expect when we find ourselves at the mercy of a Baal Bechira. So many people sort of question this Ur HaChaim, and they ask, well, could it really be? What are you saying? It's Kielu the Baal Bechira, a Kodprozal will save you if you're at the mercy of these snakes and scorpions, then your tzidkus is enough. Say, you know, why not? A control who can do anything. So I don't really want to open this whole philosophical discussion, which is a big discussion and needs a lot, but I once heard understood that the pshat is that a control can't save you from a Baal Bechir. But the pshat is that it needs, just like we understand that a person needs the queers for a control to interfere with the chukei hateva in order to save you. A person in a situation of sakana, it needs zechuyos, and of course the world could save you. Like it says in many places, we find that Chazal, a person shouldn't put himself in a place of sakana, and if the kodbrokha saves him, then the mat in the zechuyos of it takes away his zechuyos. So when a person puts himself in a place where a kodbrokha needs to interfere with the chukei hateva in order to save you, that requires zechuyos. Now, an interference with the koyach habechira of a person, that is the greatest, most furthest degree of interference with Chukei HaTeva. It's because if one wants to interfere with the Chukei HaTeva of those who are not Baalei Bechira, that requires a much lower level of Neis than the level of, so to speak, Neis required for Kodesh Baruch Hu to interfere with the Koyach HaBechira. Koyach HaBechira is such a fixed and central part of the way Kodesh Baruch Hu has set up the world to normally run, that for Kodesh Baruch Hu to interfere with that Koyach is such a great diversion from the general Chukei HaTeva that it requires the peak Neis, and the amount of zechuyos which are necessary for such a Neis to take place is far greater than the amount of zechuyos which are necessary for a Neis when we deal with those who are not Baalei Bechira. So that's the Aruch Haim's approach. That is Reuven's intent by throwing him into the bar. Better off to be with those who are not Baalei Bechira than to be with those who are Baalei Bechira. But those who are not Baalei Bechira, we can expect that a tzaddik like Yosef will get a Neis and be saved, which is not necessarily so in the hands of those who are Baalei Bechira. Okay, now I'd like to come to something which will bring us to a little more of a halachic discussion. Very, very simple parrot. So avoid these sort of philosophical type of discussion of the Aruch Haim. A simple parrot of the Mizrahi, instead of the Tullus, no question. This which we ask, I had any snakes and scorpions, so what was Reuven thinking? How's he going to be saved by throwing him into the pit? Because we could say, the brothers said, well, no. Who said they knew there were snakes and scorpions there? They didn't know. So they'll tell us there were snakes and scorpions. We know. But Reuven and the brothers, they didn't know. Not Reuven, but not Yaakov. Not Reuven and not his brothers. Nobody knew. And I'll prove it to you, he said. If they would have known, and they would have seen that Yosef escaped these snakes and scorpions, and he wasn't killed by them, they surely would not have gone ahead after this in a few psukim time and gone and solved it. If he would manage to be saved from these snakes, they surely would not have gone ahead and solved it. Let's take a look, even at Nebuchadnezzar, the great Russia, in Kol Rishmusa, with all his wickedness, when he saw Daniel being saved from the lions, thoughts of Tshuva arose in his mind. How much more for the children of Yaakov Avinu? Elamai, says the Mizrahi, from the fact that we see that they went ahead and did sell him, and they didn't take note of this amazing mess of him being saved from the snakes and scorpions, Elamai, we're forced to conclude that they weren't aware. They didn't know there were snakes and scorpions in that pit. Now, why did they not know there were snakes and scorpions in the pit? Now let's have a little look at a fascinating thing in the Gemara, which is the source of this Chazal, where it's written that it didn't have any water, but it did have any snakes and scorpions. And we will see, it's a Gemara in Shabbos, and there are two Ma'amorim juxtaposed one to the other, which shed amazing light on this topic. Let's have a look. Ma'amori in Shabbos, Shabbos. There's two statements from the same Amora, one after the other. Amor of Kahana, first statement. Amor of Kahana, Dorish Rav Nosson Bar Yumi Mishmeder of Tan. Says Rav Kahana, in the name of Rav Nosson Bar Yumi, in the name of Rav Tan. A lineup of three Amorim. Ner Shal Chanan. A Ner Chanukah which one places above 20 amos, and takes the Ner Chanukah and places it on some platform very high up, psula, above 20 amos, is possible, because sukkah ukam mobu, exactly the same as a sukkah where the schach is above 20 amos, which is possible, and exactly the same as a mobu, a three-sided street enclosure where we are matir it by placing a koira, a beam, above the walls of the mobile, and if the koira is above 20 amos, it is possible. So three halachas which are the same, mishpacha, Ner Chanukah, sukkah, mobile, there is a psul of above 20 amos. But Amar Rav Kahana, then another memra, directly after this, the same three amoraim, Over Kahana, Dorish of Lotum Bamin Yumi, Mishmaid of Tampum. Magis, see, what does it mean in the Potuk? Baboy Rey came by Mayim. The Masrish and Hema, Baboy Rey, Eddie and Dea, Shane by Mayim. Why does it say it was empty, it didn't have water? Obviously, if it was empty, it didn't have water. And the Masrish was no, Mayim by Mayim. Mayim ain't by other Mahashim Bakrab and Yeshua. That is the Gemara, these two statements, one after the other. Now, what is the connection between these two statements? So obviously the Poshim Pshat is simply, we do find this in the Gemara, that it's the same Amora, so it's one after the other, and that's how it goes. But there is another possible connection over here, which the Torah Tmimah makes. But we'll consider for a second why an Erech Hanukkah, which one places in the Ma'ala Me'etrim, why is it possible? We know it's possible because Chazal say that above 20 avos lo sholto be'eina. Above 20 avos, one cannot really perceive fully what is going on. And it's the same reason that a sukkah, according to one of the Talmud in the Gemara, it's the same reason that a sukkah in the Ma'ala Me'etrim is possible, because one needs to perceive the tat, the Ma'ala Yedus there is saying, and although we should remember that sukkah is the shaftiyas in Yisrael HaHashem, protected us in sukkahs in the Midbar, and about 20 others you don't perceive the tzach. And then, similarly, the koyer of the beam which one places at the end of the mavoi, which is supposed to remind us at the end of the mavoi that we shouldn't carry out the rishat harabim, involves an idea of a reminder, of a hecker, of noticing, and about 20 others you don't see. So these three halachos are based on the principle that about 20 others we don't perceive it. In the same way, the bowl in which Yosef was placed, they didn't perceive what was going on at the bottom of the bowl. Why? Because the bowl was deeper than 20 amos. The Torah Tmimah makes this suggestion. Let's have a look. Well, you call it. Do not be surprised in the low march of a Torah bowl. They did not see what was within the bowl. He the female she posa from a parish in a second tommy. It is written in one of the Meforshim in the Sefer Tomid that the term Hashlocha, to cast, to throw, always is further than 20 amos. And the word used in the Pasuk over here is Vayashlichu Oisai Haboyro. They cast him into the boat. Because it's still Vayashlichu.
You could have the height of the bar after you've been dropped 20 amos.
20 amos. So that was also a sort of mate.
Yeah.
In Kain, I have boy almost extra amma the yoke. So the boy was deeper than 20 amas. The Kaimalon, then a malame etrim, eno shell obam shell letters. Come the Kaimalon, the Indian there comes of the sukkah. Deeper than 20 amas, the person does not recognize. The Ishlachavim, the sees there, with this we understand, Michos, the Shaikhos, Drosha, Zubi, Gemara, in Habin, there comes. With this we understand the connection between these two points in the Gemara. There is Hanukkah, and this point that the Zohar was deep, that they threw into the Zohar and they had it in 20 amps, had it in the Choshim Ba'akravim, because they didn't know they were there because it was deeper than 20 amps. Okay, I want to continue with a couple more halakhic points which relate to these halakhos of 20 amps. If we'll turn over to the next side of the sheet, like to look at one particular shayla which the Rishonim already discussed as regards Ner Kamak. The Gemara in Sukkah tells us the following point, that based on the reason that a Sukkah above 20 others is possible because one needs to perceive the Tzach. The Gemara says the following thing. We know that when one builds a Sukkah, the walls of the Sukkah do not necessarily have to touch the Tzach. I can build low walls down here which reach the height of 10 tefachim, can have posts or something in the corner which will support my tzach, and the tzach will be on top, resting on those posts, so long as I have kosher walls at the bottom which are directly underneath the tzach. I said, if indeed I build walls of a sukkah which do reach the tzach, not necessarily required, but if I do that, then, according to the opinion that the psul of tzach above 20 amos is due to the fact that I need to notice it, when I'll have walls of a sukkah which reach the tach, the sukkah will still be kosher. That which above 20 is possible is only if the walls don't reach the tach. But if they reach the tach, it will still be kosher. Why will it still be kosher? Because the hole still is, because I don't notice the tach. Take note of it. If the walls reach the tach, then there's a certain way of perceiving the tach. Why? Because you take note of the wall. Your gaze goes up the wall, and then you see, hey, there's the tach on top, so you see the tach as well. So if the walls reach the tach, even if the tach is above 20, it will still be kosher. Let us just add parenthetically that we don't pass in this way because there are other reasons also to puzzle Lamala Me'etri. This is not the only reason of sort of Lamala Me'etri. But according to this reason, that the problem is due to the fact that you don't perceive it, the Gemara says that if the walls will go all the way up, then it's fine. Your gaze goes up the wall and you perceive the tzach. Having said this, says Rabbeinu Yoel in the Torah, let's have a look at Neret Hanukkah. When we say a Neret Hanukkah is possible in Malam Eitrim, in fact, the Gemara says it's possible for Sukkah and for Mokul. So says Rabbeinu Yoel, what will be if in Bol I'll have a Neret Hanukkah in the Malam Eitrim? And it's all very well if it's outside on some platform somewhere and it's Malam Eitrim. Then I understand that you're saying to me that the Baal Me'etrin, but you won't perceive it. But what will be if you'll have an Neret Hanukkah which is inside on a shelf next to a wall? So then maybe you will perceive it, exactly like the Gemara said regarding a sukkah. So you'll look up the wall and you'll perceive it. So maybe you'll say, but indeed, that which we puzzle a Neret Hanukkah, the Baal Me'etrin, is only outdoors. But indoors, adjacent to a wall, then there's no ksul of Neret Hanukkah in the Baal Me'etrim. So, well, that's probably a bit unlikely indoors, because most roofs are lower than 20. But if I would have a wedding hall or something with a very high ceiling, and I'll put it on the shelf up there, says Rabbeinu Yoel, it's kosher. But all the other is showing about 20 kohanim, and we all pass him this way. Oh, very good. So the Rishonim is toastless in Sukkah, says, I'll bring you a proof from a Mavui. He's chalik on Rabbeinu Yoel, and he says, I'll bring you proof from a Mavui. A Mavui, the Torah that we're discussing, generally rests on the walls of the Mavui. So you have the three-sided Mavui, and at the entrance of the Mavui, resting on the two walls of the Mavui, you place this beam, and that permits you to carry in the Mavui up until the beam. So after the Bali Toysos, well, if it would be so simple, this principle, that if you look up the wall and you see what's on top, that already avoids the problem of lo shalta be'eino, not being able to perceive what's above 20. So why in the Mavui is there such a psalm? Either Korah rests on the walls of the Mavui, and on my say the Bali Toysos, there must be a chiluk. There must be a distinction. It's only, even though the Gemara in Sukkah does say this, that's only in reference to the roof of the sukkah, which in addition has another factor in its favor, besides the fact that you look up the wall and then you perceive it. Also, it has a particular size. It has to be at very least the size of 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So you perceive it when we have the combination of those two factors. A, you look all the way up the wall, and B, it is of significant size, then you perceive what is above 20. But when you look at the wall and you look at something minute, something which could be only very small, it could have only a width of a tefach or less, then there is no such principle that gaze looking at the wall will bring your gaze to what's above 20. You can only perceive above 20 if you have the combination of two factors. You look at the wall and you perceive something of significant size. But if you have something of minute size, then even looking at the wall does not help you. And that is why, both in Mavui and following that, also in Neret Hanukkah, the fact that you look up the wall is not going to help. Two other interesting points regarding Neret Hanukkah above 20. One is, what was asked, somebody who lives in an apartment building, where his apartment is above 20 amos, from the tree. So, you know, I don't really want to get now into the whole discussion of where's the best place to light your menorah. It's a very big discussion, and there's many different minhagim. But he was asked by somebody who generally his minhag would have been to light it inside by the window. That's what he would have always done. But the question was whether now that he's trying to find himself in this apartment where his window is above 20 from the street, should he now change his minhag? Should he light it somewhere else? Because now it's above 20 from the street. The people in the street aren't going to see. So Rav Wozniak replied to him that in fact the general minhag to light, those who do light inside by a window, the main concept of Pirsum Nisa for this version of Kiyum HaMitzvah is really for the B'nai HaBayit. And the window is a sort of added plus, it can also have some Pirsum to the street. So he says that it could perhaps be that a minimal level of Pirsum is there even above 20. Maybe somebody will notice, but not generally perceived, but maybe somebody will notice. And B, at least for this minimal level of Pirsum, we could take into account the fact that there might be other buildings on the other side of the street, which are the same height. So the people in the Shusharabim don't see it, but the people in the buildings around do see it. So at least for this scenario, he asked him that the person who always lit that way should continue lighting that way, despite the fact that his window was above 20. One further interesting point, in the halachos of a mabui, we find that when one places the koirah above 20, if the koirah is made with types of decorations and engravings and other things which will draw attention to it, then even above 20, the koirah is kosher. A koirah above 20 is only possible when it's an average, standard, plain, boring piece of wood. But if it has some sort of fancy carvings and engravings and other things which will draw people's attention to it, then it's kosher even above 20. Yes, sir, what comes from the Sugya Tagamori, the Paschim in the Rambam. Now, in Neras Hanukkah, we don't find any such halakha. It's possible that a Neras Hanukkah is possible above 20. Yeah, nobody writes that if you use a very fancy menorah with illuminating lead light, but I don't know, it's going to be kosher.
I think it's because the whole thing of a brother, you don't ever have to have a problem with switch. Just a name for people in that. You might have finished your house, and you have to worry that
it's a very unlikely shayla to really come to it, but the only shayla would come out for somebody who lights outside, and he decided for some odd reason, I don't know why one would do this, to light it on some major platform above 20 yards. Not a likely practical shayla, I agree.
If he had a mirfetta,
then
he would
light it
on his
mirfetta
outside.
Maybe if he used mirfetta like a cocktail or something, the idea is supposed to be the principle or something, could be. Yeah. So let's just conclude this point. So we don't ever find anybody saying that a decorated menorah is going to help, and it doesn't help. I would suggest that maybe the point of chiddush is that Chazal only permitted this type of drawing attention, that it helps. We only find it in a koirah. In a koirah, you are able to make that the actual chapter, the actual item itself, which needs to be noticed, becomes more noticeable. The actual chesed of the mitzvah becomes more noticeable. And even in Torah, Chazal didn't say that if you put a little sign at the bottom of the mohel and say, here there is a Torah, please look up, then we don't say it helps. We only say when the actual object of the mitzvah itself has become more noticeable. Now in a Torah we have opportunity to do that. Instead of a piece of wood, you can put a more engraved piece of wood, a piece of wood with carvings. But in Neras Hanukkah, the actual mitzvah itself is simply the light. Even the menorah is just a cane to hold the light. So we don't have any opportunity to how you're going to make the light more noticeable than it already is. So we don't have any opportunities to be the kind of this, and therefore there's no relevance to this halakha in Hilchos Kabbalah. Okay, we'll stop here.